The 33 sermons on Nibbana were delivered by the Venerable Bhikkhu Katukurunde Nyanananda in Sinhala at Mitrigala Nisaranavanaya Forest Hermitage. They were translated into English by the same Venerable Monk, presently residing at Potkulkala Forest Hermitage in Kandagedra Devalagam.
නමෝ තස් භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස් නමෝ තස් භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස් නමෝ තස් භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස් ඒතං සන්තං ඒතං පණීතං යදිදං සබ්බ සංඛාර සමතෝ සම්බූපධිපටි නිස්සග්ගෝ තණ්හක්ඛයෝ විරාගෝ නිරෝධෝ නිබ්බාන. This is peaceful, this is excellent, namely the stilling of all preparations, the relinquishment of all assets, the destruction of craving, detachment, cessation, extinction. With the permission of the assembly of the Venerable Meditative Monks, this is the 30th sermon in the series of sermons on Nibbana. In our previous sermon, we discussed the way of liberating the mind from the grip of thoughts, which are comparable to the army of Mar, by means of the gradual and systematic mode of practice based on the twin principles of pragmatism and relativity. We also made an attempt to understand why the Arhat Phala Samadhi of the Arhat, who arrives at the non-prolific state by gradually attenuating cravings, conceits and views, comes to be called Avitakka Samadhi, thoughtless concentration. This Avitakka Samadhi is the noble silence in its highest sense. It is not the temporary subsidence of thinking and pondering as in tranquility meditation. It goes deeper in that it routs the hosts of Mara at their very citadel, as it were, by penetrative wisdom. The other day, with special reference to the Sakkapani Sutta in the Digha Nikaya, we outlined in brief a path of practice gradually tending towards the cessation of reckonings born of prolific perception. That discourse expounds a happiness, an unhappiness, and an equanimity to be pursued, and a happiness, an unhappiness, and an equanimity not to be pursued. We get a clear enunciation of these two kinds of happiness, unhappiness and equanimity in the Salayadana Vibhanga Sutta of the Madhyama Nikaya. In that discourse, the Buddha gives an exposition of 36 pathways of thoughts of beings under the heading Chattinsa Sattapada, literally 36 steps of beings. They are listed as follows. 1. Chagyehasitani somanasani. 6 kinds of happiness based on the household life. 2. Chanekamasitani somanasani. 6 kinds of happiness based on renunciation. 3. Chagyehasitani domanasani. 6 kinds of unhappiness based on the household life. 4. Chanekamasitani domanasani. 6 kinds of unhappiness based on renunciation. 5. Chagyehasita upekkha. 6 kinds of equanimity based on the household life. 6. Chennekamasita upekkha. 6 kinds of equanimity based on renunciation. The 6 in each case refers to the 6 objects of sense, namely form, sound, smell, taste, tangible, and idea. Rupa, sadda, gandha, rasa, phottabha, dhamma. Now, in order to acquaint ourselves with the 6 kinds of happiness based on the household life, let us try to understand the definition of the first kind, that is to say, form as the object of the eye. Chakuvinyanam rupanam itthanam kantanam manapanam manoramanam lokamisa pati samyuttanam patilabham va patilabhato samanupassato pubbeva patiladdha pubbam atitam niruddham viparinatam samasarato upajjati somanasa. Yang evarupam somanasam idam buchyati gehasitam somanasa. When one regards as an acquisition, an acquisition of forms cognizable by the eye that are desirable, charming, agreeable, delightful, connected with worldly gains, or when one recalls what was formerly acquired that has passed, ceased, and changed, happiness arises. Such happiness as this is called happiness based on the household life. The happiness based on renunciation is defined as follows. Rūpānaṁ te vāṇicchataṁ viditvā viparināma virāga nirodhaṁ pubbe te varūpāye tarahicca sabbe te rūpā anicchā dukkhā viparināma dhammāti evametaṁ yathābhūtaṁ sammappaññāya passato uppajjati sōmanassaṁ yaṁ eva rūpaṁ sōmanassaṁ idaṁ mutiti nekkhammasitaṁ sōmanassaṁ. When by knowing the impermanence, change, fading away, and cessation of forms, one sees as it actually is with right wisdom, that forms both formerly and now are all impermanent, suffering and subject to change, happiness arises. Such happiness as this is called happiness based on renunciation. Then the unhappiness based on the household life is explained in the following verse. චක්විඤ්ඤාණං රූපාණං ဣට්ඨාණං කන්තාණං මනාපාණං මනෝරමාණං ලෝකාමිස පටිසංයුත්තාණං අප්පටිලාභං වා අප්පටිලාභතෝ සමනුපස්සතෝ පුබ්බේව අප්පටිලද්ද පුබ්බං අතීතං නිරුද්ධං විපරිණතං සමනුස්සරතෝ උප්පජ්ජිතෝ නස්ස යං ඒව රූපං දෝමනස්සං ඉදං මුච්චති ගේහ සිතං දෝමනස්ස. When one regards as a non-acquisition the non-acquisition of forms cognizable by the eye that are desirable, charming, agreeable, delightful, connected with worldly gains, or when one recalls what was formerly not acquired that has passed, ceased and changed, unhappiness arises. Such unhappiness as this is called unhappiness based on the household life. The description of unhappiness based on renunciation has a special significance to insight meditation. It runs, Rūpānaṁ te vāṇicchataṁ viditvā viparināma virāga nirodhaṁ pubbe ce varūpāye tarahicca sabbe te rūpā anicchā dukkhā viparināma dhammāti evametaṁ yathābhūtaṁ sammappaññāya disvā anuttaresu vimukhesu pihaṁ upaṭṭhāpeti kadāsunāma ahaṁ tadāyatanaṁ upasampajya bhirisāma යදරි ආයතනි ආයතනං උපසම්පජ්ජ විහෙරන්ති ඉති අනුත්තරේසු විමුක්ඛේසු පිහං උපට්ඨපයතු උපද්ජති පිහාපච්ඡා දෝමනස්සං තං ඒව රූපං දෝමනස්සං ඉදං මුච්චති නික්ඛම්මසිතං දෝමනස්ස. When by knowing the impermanence, change, fading away, and cessation of forms, one sees as it actually is with right wisdom, that forms both formerly and now are all impermanent, suffering and subject to change, one arouses a longing for the supreme deliverances. Thus, when shall I enter upon and abide in that sphere that the noble ones now enter upon and abide in? In one who arouses such a longing for the supreme deliverances, unhappiness arises, conditioned by that longing. Such unhappiness as this is called unhappiness based on renunciation. The description of unhappiness based on renunciation brings up some important terms worth discussing. Anuttaresu vimukhesu is a reference to the three supreme deliverances known as Animitta, the signless, Appanihita, the undirected, and Sunyata, the void. The reference to an ayatana, sphere, in this passage is particularly noteworthy. The sphere that the noble ones enter on and abide in is none other than the sphere alluded to in the famous Sutta on Nibbana in the Udana, beginning with Atthibhikkhave tadāyatanam yathaneva patavina āpo etc. Amongst there is that sphere in which there is neither earth nor water etc. We have pointed out that it is a reference to the cessation of the six sense spheres as a realization. So the sphere that the noble ones enter on and abide in is the very cessation of the six sense spheres. In the same sutta passage in the Udana, we came across the three terms appatittham, appavattam and anarambhanam. The unestablished, the non-continuing and the objectless, which we identified as allusions to the three deliverances. The word piha, Sanskrit spruha, longing, desire, occurring in this context shows that there need not be any hesitation in using words implying desire in connection with Nibbana. It is true that such a desire or longing for Nibbana makes one unhappy, but that unhappiness is preferable to the unhappiness based on the household life. That is why it is upgraded here as unhappiness based on renunciation. So far, we have quoted instances of the six kinds of happiness based on the household life, Chageha Sitani Somanasani, the six kinds of happiness based on renunciation, Chane Kamma Sitani Somanasani, the six kinds of unhappiness based on the household life, Chageha Sitani Domanasani, and the six kinds of unhappiness based on renunciation, Chane Kamma Sitani Domanasani. The six in each case refers to the objects of the six senses. Now let us take up a paradigm to understand the six kinds of equanimity based on the household life. Chakeha sita upekha. Trakkuna rupang disva uppajati upekha. Balasya moolhasya putujjanasya anodhidinasya avipagajinasya anadina vadasya avino asutavato putujjanasya. Yaeva rupa upekha rupang sa nati vattati. Tasma sa upekha gesitati uchati. On seeing a form with the eye, equanimity arises in a foolish, infatuated worldling, in an untaught worldling who has not conquered his limitations, who has not conquered the results of karma, and who is not aware of the danger. Such equanimity as this does not transcend form. That is why it is called equanimity based on the household life. The equanimity of a worldling untaught in the Dhamma, who has not conquered limitations and defilements, and who has not conquered the exercise of karma, is incapable of transcending form. His equanimity is accompanied by ignorance. Then comes the description of equanimity based on renunciation, nikkhamma sita upekkha. Upanante vanichatam viditva viparinama viraga nirodham pubbe keva rupaye tarhita sabbete rupanicca dukkha viparinama dhammati eva metam yathabhutam sammappanyaya pasato uppajjati upekkha. Ya eva rupa upekkha rupam sa ativattati tasma sa upekkha nikkhamma sita upekkha. When by knowing the impermanence, change, fading away and cessation of forms, one sees as it actually is with right wisdom, that forms both formerly and now are all impermanent, suffering and subject to change, equanimity arises. Such equanimity as this transcends form. That is why it is called equanimity based on renunciation. The same kind of reflection on impermanence upon occasion gives rise to happiness, unhappiness and equanimity, according to the attitude taken up. Unlike the equanimity born of ignorance, this equanimity born of right wisdom transcends form. That is why it is called equanimity based on renunciation. The Buddha speaks about all the 36 objects of sense, out of which we brought up as a paradigm the illustration given about the visual object, form. These 36 are called the 36 pathways of beings, Chattinsa Sattapada, in the sense that they depict the thought patterns of beings. In this discourse, the Buddha proclaims the basic maxim he employs in gradually channeling the thought processes of beings towards Nibbana along these 36 pathways. The maxim is summed up in the following words. Tatra idam nissaya idam pajahati. Therein, depending on this, abandon this. This maxim has some affinity to the Patiksamuppada formula. This being, this arises. In fact, this is a practical application of the same formula. In the context of the path of practice, the dependence on one thing is for the purpose of abandoning another. There is an attitude of detachment in this course of practice. Based on this maxim, the Buddha outlines the way in which he guides one towards Nibbana in four stages. The first stage in the gradual path towards Nibbana is described as follows. Tatra bhikkave yani channe kamsitani somanasa tani nissaya taniya gamma yani chagyesitani somanasa tani pajahata tani samatikkamata eva mete sang pahanan hoti eva mete sang samatikkamu hoti. Therein marks, by depending on and relying on the six kinds of happiness based on renunciation, abandon and transcend the six kinds of happiness based on the household life. That is how they are abandoned. That is how they are transcended. In the same way, by depending on the six kinds of unhappiness based on renunciation, the six kinds of unhappiness based on the household life are abandoned. Also, by depending on the six kinds of equanimity based on renunciation, the six kinds of equanimity based on the household life are abandoned. So, at the end of the first stage, what are we left with? All what is based on the household life is left behind. And only the six kinds of happiness based on renunciation, the six kinds of unhappiness based on renunciation, and the six kinds of equanimity based on renunciation remain. This is the position at the end of the first stage. Then in the second stage, a subtler and more refined level of experience is aimed at. Out of the three types of mental states based on renunciation, firstly, the six kinds of unhappiness based on renunciation are abandoned by the six kinds of happiness based on renunciation. Then the six kinds of happiness based on renunciation are abandoned by the six kinds of equanimity based on renunciation. To the extent that all the above three mental states are based on renunciation, they are of a piece with each other. Also, it is the same mode of insightful reflection that gives rise to them. However, as attitudes, happiness is subtler and more excellent than unhappiness, and equanimity is subtler and more excellent than happiness, since it is nearer to wisdom. So in the second stage, we see a gradual procedure arriving at a subtler and more excellent state, even in the case of those three mental states based on renunciation. By the end of the second stage, only equanimity based on renunciation remains. Now comes the third stage. Here the Buddha points out that in the case of equanimity, there can be two varieties. Atibhikkave upekkha nanatta nanattasita, atibhikkave upekkha ekatta ekattasita. There is marks an equanimity that is diversified based on diversity, and there is an equanimity that is unified based on unity. What is that equanimity that is diversified? It is defined as the equanimity regarding the objects of the five external senses. That is to say, equanimity regarding forms, sounds, smells, flavors, and tangibles. Equanimity that is unified is defined with reference to the immaterial realms, namely the sphere of infinity of space, the sphere of infinity of consciousness, the sphere of nothingness, and the sphere of neither perception nor non-perception. Now, in the case of these two types of equanimity, the Buddha points out a way of abandoning the equanimity based on diversity with the help of the equanimity based on unity. As equanimity, both types are commendable, but that which is diversified and based on diversity is grosser. Equanimity that is unified and based on unity is subtler and more excellent. So the equanimity based on diversity is abandoned and transcended by the equanimity that is unified, based on unity. This is the end of the third stage. In the fourth stage, we are left with only that equanimity that is based on unity. It is experienced in the higher ranks of meditation. But here too, the Buddha advocates prudent course of action. In fact, it is here that the deepest practical hint is given. Atammetam bhikkave nissāya, atammetam āgamma, yāyam upekkhāya kattāya katasita, taṁ padhata, taṁ samatikkamata. Eva metissā pahanam hoti, eva metissā samatikkamo. Monks, by depending and relying on non-identification, abandon and transcend the equanimity that is unified, based on unity. That is how it is abandoned. That is how it is transcended. Atammeta is a term we have already discussed at length in our earlier sermons. Its importance has not been sufficiently recognized in our tradition. As we pointed out, the word tammayo, literally of thatness, could be explained with reference to such usages as suvarnamaya and rajatamaya, golden and silver. How does this of thatness come by? If, for instance, one who has attained the infinity of space as a meditative experience identifies himself with it, with the conceit, esohamasmi, this am I, there is that tammeta coming in. It is a subtle grasping, or in other words, a me-thinking, manyana, imagining oneself to be one with that experience. So the Buddha's advice is to abandon and transcend even the equanimity based on unity by resorting to the maxim of atammeta, non-identification. The subtle conceit am, asmi, is that trace of grasping with which one tries to sit pretty on that which is impermanent and changing. It is the most fundamental assertion of existence. In the Sapurisa Sutta of the Majjhima Nikaya, we get a good illustration of the application of this principle of retirement made known by the Buddha. Sapurisa Ochakho Bhikkave Iti Pati Sanchikati Nivasanya Nasanyakana Samapati Apikho Atamyata Buddha Bhagavata Yene Yene Manjanti Tato tang hoti anyatha. So atammetam yevantaram karitva, taya neva sanyana sanyayana samapattiya, neva attanukkam seti na parang vambe, ayampi bhikkave sappurisadham. But a good man, monks, considers that non-identification, even with the attainment of the sphere of neither perception nor non-perception, has been declared by the fortunate one, in such terms as, in whatever way they imagine, thereby it turns otherwise. So he takes into account that very non-identification and neither exalts himself nor disparages others because of his attainment of the sphere of neither perception nor non-perception. This too, monks, is the nature of a good man. In the Sapurisa Sutta, the Buddha expounds the characteristics of good man. In this context, the term Sapurisa, good man, is used exclusively to represent a noble disciple, Aryasavaka. A noble disciple does not look upon his jhanic attainments in the same way as an ordinary meditator attaining jhana. His point of view is different. This discourse explains this viewpoint. A good man reflects wisely according to the advice given by the Buddha to the effect that even to the higher jhanic attainment of neither perception nor non-perception, the principle of non-identification must be applied, recalling the maxim made known by the Buddha, yena yenahi manyanti tato tang hoti anyata, in whatever way they imagine, thereby it turns otherwise. This is a maxim we had discussed earlier too. Manyana is egoistic imagining. When one thinks in egoistic terms about something, by that very me-thinking, it turns otherwise. Due to egoistic imagining, it becomes a thing. And once it becomes a thing, it is bound to change and become another. The good man calls to mind that maxim, that know, and refrains from exalting himself and disparaging others on account of his attainment. He does not identify himself with it. From this it becomes clear that atammeta, or non-identification is the path to Nibbana. So the Buddha gradually channelizes the pathways of thoughts of beings from the grosser to the subtler levels and finally tops up by directing them to Nibbana through non-identification, atammayata. Non-identification is the watchword for clinging pre-parinibbana. The diktam tatra idam nissa idam padhati, therein, depending on this, abandon this, which the Buddha expounds in the Salahatana Vibhanga Sutta, portrays a duality between attention, manasikara, and inattention, amanasikara. That is to say, the basic principle in this diktam is the method of encouraging inattention to grosser things by recommending a way of attending to subtler things. So it seems both attention and inattention are given an importance in this procedure. In order to eliminate one thing by inattention, attention to some other thing is recommended. For the purpose of inattention to something gross, attention to something subtle is taken up. But that is not the end of it. Even that is expelled with the help of something subtle. Here we have a wonderful technique based on the twin principles of pragmatism and relativity. These two terms comprehend the entire gamut of the path of practice in Buddhism. Pragmatic means for some practical purpose. Relative means in relation to something else, that is, as a means to an end, and not absolutely as an end in itself. So in this system of practice, everything has a pragmatic and a relative value. The question of attention and inattention has also to be understood in that background. A clear illustration of the method of elimination of grosser mental states with the help of subtler mental states by attention and inattention comes in the Vitakka Santana Sutta of the Majjhima Nikaya. There the Buddha explains this method making use of a simile of a carpenter. Seyatapi bhikkhave dakkho palagandova palagannante vasiva sukumaya aniya olarikan anin abinihane abinihareye abinivajjeye eva meva kho bhikkhave bhikkhuno yam nimittam agamma yam nimittam manasikaroto uppajjanti papaka avasala vitakka chandupa sanhitapi dosupasanghitapi, mohupasanghitapi, tena bhikkhave bhikkhuna, tamma nimitta, anyang nimitta manasikatabbang, kusalupasanghita. Just as monks, a skilled carpenter or his apprentice might knock out, draw out, and remove a coarse peg by means of a fine one. Even so monks, when a monk finds that due to some sign, by attending to some sign, there arise in him evil, unskillful thoughts connected with desire, with hate, and with delusion. That monks should attend to some other sign in its stead, one that has to do with skillful. Now let us try to understand the point of this simile. When, for instance, a carpenter, in fitting out a door, finds that he is driving a blunt nail, he extracts it with the help of a sharper one. He takes up the sharper nail just for the purpose of extracting the blunt nail. So also one resorts to a skillful thought to expel the unskillful thought as a means to an end. This kind of pragmatic and relative approach avoids tenacious grasping and dogmatic involvement. The spirit of the law of dependent arising runs through the entire course of Buddhist practice, culminating in atammayata, non-identification. The two terms kusala and akusala also deserve our special attention in this context. The basic meaning of kusala is skillful, and akusala means unskillful. Here again we have something relative. Skillful presupposes unskillful and gets a value in relation to the latter. It has no absolute value. We make use of the skillful in order to push away the unskillful. That done, there is no further involvement with it, as one's last resort is atammayata, non-identification. That is why there is no problem of a clogging coming in. Our discussion of the Sanatana Nibbana Sutta brings to light another unique feature of this Dhamma. In other religious systems, the question of reality is resolved by having recourse to unity. Oneness is supposed to be the ultimate goal. In our analysis of the samsaric problem, we often refer to a duality or a dichotomy. Everywhere we were confronted with a duality. But to grasp the two as one in some form of oneness is not the way out. Instead, we have here as the final solution atammeta or non-identification, a clinging-free approach in the last analysis. It is in the nature of samsaric existence that beings find themselves bound and fettered. These fetters are called sanyojanani. A binding or fetter implies two, as when two bulls are tied together. The term upadana is also used quite often. It implies a holding on to something. There too the notion of a duality comes in, one who holds and the thing held. It is not at all easy to transcend this duality, characteristic of samsaric existence. This is the crux of the whole problem. Unity or oneness is not the solution. It has to be solved with extreme judiciousness. In the very first discourse of the Samyutta Nikaya, we get a solution to the problem, briefly stated. The discourse is called Oghatarana Sutta, crossing the flood. And it was given pride of place probably because of its importance. A deity comes and asks the Buddha, Katang Tvang Marisa Oghangatari? How did you, sir, cross the flood? And the Buddha answers, Appatittham kvahang avso anayuhnam oghangatari. Without tarrying, friend, and without hurrying, did I cross the flood? But the deity, finding the answer too enigmatic, asks, Yatha katang panatvang marisa appatittham anayuhnam oghangatari? But how exactly is it, sir, that you crossed the flood without tarrying and without hurrying? Then the Buddha makes an explanatory statement. Yada swaham avasu santitthami, tadasu sansidami. Yada swaham avasu ayuhami, tadasu nibbuihami. Evam kvaham avasu appatittham anayuham ogham atari. When my friend tarried, I found myself sinking. When my friend hurried, I got swept away. And so, friend, without tarrying and without hurrying, did I cross the flood. Then the deity, being pleased, uttered the following verse in approbation. Chirassam vatapassami brahmanam parinibbutam appatittham anayuham thinnam loke visatya. Oh, what length of time since I beheld a saint with all his passions quelled, who neither tarrying nor yet hurrying has crossed the world's viscosity, craving. This discourse on crossing the flood reveals some salient features of the middle path. If a person caught up in a water current tries to stay still, he will sink. If he simply struggles to escape, he will get swept away. So like a good swimmer, he has to avoid both extremes, and by means of a mindful and systematic gradual effort, work out his freedom. In other words, he has to strive, not struggle. So we can understand why the Buddha in his very first sermon, Dhamma Chakkappavattana Sutta, discourse on the turning of the wheel of Dhamma, proclaimed as the middle path, the Noble Eightfold Path, avoiding both extremes of attachment to sensuality, Kamasukhalikan Yoga, and self-mortification, Aptakilamathamyuk. Here too, the implication is that the entire round of existence is a water current to be crossed over by means of a systematic and gradual effort. In some of our earlier sermons, while analyzing the law of dependent arising, we made use of the simile of the vortex for easy comprehension. Now if we are to take it up again, we may say that it is in the nature of beings in samsara to get drifted by the current of preparations, sankhara, owing to ignorance, avijja, and go on revolving between consciousness, vijnana, and name and form, nama. This ignorance in the form of the four pervert perceptions, namely the perception of permanence in the impermanent, the perception of pleasure in the painful, the perception of beauty in the repulsive, and the perception of self in the not-self, gives rise to the runaway current of water which keeps running round and round between consciousness and name and form. This is the samsaric vortex, samsara water. Now, for instance, if we throw even a small leaf to a spot where there is a vortex, it also keeps revolving. Similarly, all over this samsaric existence, duality holds sway. Therefore, freedom from it can be won only by a subtle form of striving. That is why the Buddha used the two terms, apatittham and anayuham. Avoiding the two extremes of stagnation and struggling, one has to cross the flood, going the middle way. When the Buddha proclaimed that freedom can be won only by the middle way, avoiding both extremes, the extremist philosophers of his day criticized and disparaged him, saying, "Then you are preaching a doctrine of bewilderment." We find such an instance of accusation in the Magandhya Sutta of the Attakavagga of the Sutta Nipata. The Brahmin Magandhya poses the following question to the Buddha. Ajhatta santiti yameta matta katanu dhirei paveditanta. That which they call inward peace, in what terms have the wise proclaimed that peace? The Buddha's answer took the following form. Nadithya, nasutiya, nanyanina, silabhatena pibisuddhima. Adithya, asutiya, anyana, asilata, abhata, no pitena. Yete chanissajya anugrahaya, santo vanissaya bhavamna japti. Not by wits, nor by learning, nor by knowledge, nor yet by virtue and holy works, they say, can purity come. Neither can it come by without wits, learning and knowledge, without virtue and holy works. Letting go of them all and grasping not one, the peaceful one leaning on none would hanker no more for existence. At this reply, the Brahmin Magandhya was puzzled and accuses the Buddha of prevarication. No chegira dithya na sutiya na jnanina silabhatena api visuddhi maha. Adithya asutiya anyana asilata abhata nopitena manye mahan momuhameva dhamma dithyayake pachyanti suddhi. If not by wits, no by learning, no by knowledge, nor yet by virtue and holy works can purity be won. If it comes not without wits, learning and knowledge, without virtue and holy works, well then, bewilderment itself, I think, is this dhamma. For there are some who claim purity by words. Now these two verses call for some comments. Firstly, there is a minor problem about variant reading. In both these verses, we followed the reading visuddhi, whereas some editions accept the reading nasuddhima, where the negative seems superfluous. Visuddhi seems more meaningful here. The commentarial explanation of these two verses seems to go off at a tangent. It says that the negatives in the first two lines of the Buddha's reply refer to wrong views, wrong learning, wrong knowledge, wrong virtue and wrong vows, and that the third and fourth lines refer to right view, right learning, right knowledge, right virtue and right vows. In other words, it is only a question of wrong view, michchaditti and right view somehow. This interpretation misses the subtle point at issue in this dialogue. If it is as simple as that, there is no ground for Magandhya's accusation. Other religious teachers who disputed with each other used to assert that purity is attained only by their views, learning, knowledge, virtue and moral. Here then, it is not a question of difference between Micchaditi and Sammaditi. Here is something more radical concerning Sammaditi itself. According to this enlightened approach, views, etc. cannot totally be dispensed with, nor are they to be grasped. We come back now to the two key words, pragmatic and relative. That is why the Buddha declared that purity cannot be attained by views, learning, knowledge, virtue and works, nor in the absence of these qualities. This is an apparently contradictory statement, which however puts in a nutshell the essence of the middle path. The inward peace mentioned in the above context is nothing other than the clinging-free perfect extinction, anupada parinibbana. That becomes clear by the last three lines of the Buddha's reply. Ete cha nissajja anugghaya santo vanissaya bhavannijap. Letting go of them all and grasping not one, that peaceful one leaning on none, would hanker no more for existence. We came across the word anisita in our discussions about Nibbana. For instance, in the cryptic formula, nisita sa chalitam, anisita sa chalitam nati. To the one attached there is wavering, to the unattached one there is no wavering. Being unattached there is no hankering for existence. Where there is grasping, there is existence. We may revert to our simile of sharpening a razor. The constituents of the path have to be taken up as one takes up a razor for sharpening, ready to let go. Once the purpose is served, they have to be given up. That is the dictum underlying this dialogue in the Margandhya Sutra. Now we come to a discourse which clearly and unmistakably presents this extraordinary first principle. The discourse is the Rathavinita Sutta of the Majjhimanikaya. Here it is not a case of arguing with the Brahmin. The interlocutors in this discourse are two stalwarts of this dispensation, namely Venerable Sariputta and Venerable Punnamantaniputta. Their long discussion on the path of practice, unfolding itself in dialogue form, was not meant for any clarification of doubts for themselves. It was probably inspired by a benevolent wish to help those Margandhiyas in the world who are ignorant of the pragmatic nature and relative value of the Buddha's middle path. For easy comprehension, we shall present this discourse in three parts. First of all, Venerable Sariputta poses the following question to Venerable Punnamantaniputta. Tinnuko auso sila visuddhattam bhagavati brahmacharyangus? What friend is it for the sake of purification of virtue that the holy life is lived under the fortunate one? And Venerable Punnamantaniputta replies, no friend. Then, is it for the sake of purification of mind that the holy life is lived under the fortunate one? No friend. Then, is it for the sake of purification of view that the holy life is lived under the fortunate one? No friend. Then, is it for the sake of purification by overcoming doubt that the holy life is lived under the fortunate one? No friend. Then is it for the sake of purification by knowledge and vision of what is the path and what is not the path that the holy life is lived under the fortunate one? No friend. Then is it for the sake of purification by knowledge and vision of the way that the holy life is lived under the fortunate one? No friend. Then is it for the sake of purification by knowledge and vision that the holy life is lived under the fortunate one? No friend. The Venerable Sariputta asks, for the sake of what then, friend, is the holy life lived under the fortunate one? Friend, it is for the sake of perfect Nibbana without clinging that the holy life is lived under the fortunate one. So the ensemble of part one of the dialogue is that the holy life is not lived under the fortunate one for the sake of any of those purifications, but for something called anupada parinibbana, perfect Nibbana without kidding. Now, in what we would call part 2 of the dialogue, Venerable Sariputta highlights the contradictions in the answers given so far, somewhat like Markandeya. Apparently, there is some need for clarification. He asks, but friend, is purification a virtue of perfect Nibbana without clinging? No, friend. In this way, he asks whether any of the other stages of purification, up to and including purification by knowledge and mission, is perfect Nibbana without clinging. Venerable Punna answers in the negative. Then Venerable Sariputta asks, Kimpanavaso anyatraimehi dhammehi anupada parinibbana? But friend, is perfect Nibbana without clinging to be attained without these states? No, friend. So then it looks as if the trend of contradictions has come to a head. Now in part 3 of the dialogue, we find Venerable Sariputta rhetorically summing up the previous section of the dialogue. When asked, but friend, is purification of virtue perfect Nibbana without clinging? You replied, no, friend. And so on, citing even the last negative response. And when asked, but friend, is perfect Nibbana without clinging to be attained without these states? You replied, no, friend. And rounds up by asking with apparent exasperation, how then, friend, can one understand the meaning of this statement? So rather dramatically, the stage is now set for Venerable Bunna Mantaniputta to come out with the deepest point in the discussion. Sila visuddhim cheyahuso bhagavan upada parinibbanam panyapesse sa upadanam yeva samanam anupada parinibbanam panyapesse. Friend, if the fortunate one had designated purification of virtue as perfect Nibbana without clinging, he would have designated what is still accompanied by clinging as perfect Nibbana without clinging. In the same strain, he goes on to apply this criterion to the other stages of purification and finally brings out the absurdity of the other extreme in the following words. Anyatra cheyaso imehi dhammehi anupada parinibbana abhavissa putujjano parinibbayaya putujjano yaso anyatra imehi dhammehi. And if, friend, perfect Nibbana without clinging were to be attained without these states, then even an ordinary worldling would have attained perfect Nibbana without clinging. For an ordinary worldling, friend, is without those states. Now we can see how subtle this question is. Simply because it was said that none of the above states is perfect Nibbana without clinging, they cannot be dispensed with. We have already discussed the significance of the Alagadhyupama Sutta in this concern. There we came across two similes, the simile of the raft and the simile of the water snake. To carry the raft on one's shoulder after crossing is one extreme. To take the water snake by its tail is the other extreme. The middle path lies between these two extremes. That is the implication of the above statement, that if perfect Nibbana without clinging is attained without these states, then even an ordinary worldling would have attained it, for he has none of them. For further clarification of this point, Venerable Punna Mantaniputta comes out with the simile of the relay of chariots. King Pasenadi of Kosala, while living in Savatthi, has some urgent business to settle at Saketa. Between Savatthi and Saketa, 7 relay chariots are kept ready for him. The king mounts the first relay chariot and by means of it arrives at the second relay chariot. Then he dismounts from the first relay chariot and mounts the second chariot. By means of the second chariot, he arrives at the third chariot. In this way, finally he arrives at Saketa by means of the 7th chariot. Then when his friends and relatives in Saketa ask him, Sire, did you come from Savatthi to Saketa by means of this chariot? He cannot reply in the affirmative. He has to relate the whole story of passing from chariot to chariot. Having given this simile as an illustration, Venerable Punna Mantani Putta sums up the correct solution to the point at issue in the following memorable words. Evameva kho avaso sila visuddhi yavadeva citta visuddhatta. Citta visuddhi yavadeva ditti visuddhatta. Ditti visuddhi yavadeva kankha vitarna visuddhatta. Kankha vitarna visuddhi yavadeva magga magga jnana darsana visuddhatta. Magga magga jnana darsana visuddhi yavadeva patipada jnana darsana visuddhatta. Patipada jnana darsana visuddhi yavadeva jnana darsana visuddhatta. Jnana darsana visuddhi yavadeva anupada. Parinibbanattha anupada parinibbanatthan kho avaso bhagavati brahmacharyaṃ. Even so, friend, purification of virtue is purposeful as far as purification of the mind. Purification of the mind is purposeful as far as purification of view. Purification of view is purposeful as far as purification by overcoming doubt. Purification by overcoming doubt is purposeful as far as purification by knowledge and vision of what is the path and what is not the path. Purification by knowledge and vision of what is the path and what is not the path is purposeful as far as purification by knowledge and vision of the way. Purification by knowledge and vision of the way is purposeful as far as purification by knowledge and vision. Purification by knowledge and vision is purposeful as far as perfect Nibbana without clinging. It is for perfect Nibbana without clinging that the holy life is lived under the fortunate one. The key word in this grand final of this dramatic exposition is Yavadeva. Simply rendered, it means just for. That is the sufficing condition for something else. Properly understood, it is a watchword upholding the twin principles of pragmatism and relativity. In the light of the illustration by relay chariots, this watchword stands for that impersonal momentum or impetus required for any gradual course of purposive action according to the law of dependent arising. So we see how the Buddha discovered and laid bare the first principles of a universal law conducive to one's emancipation. Here is a series of states in which one state is to be made use of for reaching another, and that for reaching yet another, but none of which is to be grasped per se. This is the distinction between what is called upadhi or sansaric asset and nirupadhi or the assetless nibbana. In the case of those meritorious deeds productive of sansaric assets, one goes on accumulating and amassing them. But for the nibbanic state of nirupadhi, the assetless, there is a different approach. One state leads up to another, and that to yet another, in accordance with the simile of the relay chariots. But none of them is to be grasped per se. One grasps neither purification of virtue, no purification of the mind, no purification of view, nay, not even purification by knowledge and vision, leaving them all behind and reaching the subtlest of them all. There comes the final let go to attain that perfect extinction without clinging, anupada parinibbana. This is the subtlest truth in this dhamma.
Dear listeners, it is our sincere wish to make these sermons accessible free of charge to all who like to listen to them, because the gift of the Dhamma excels all other gifts. We therefore encourage you to copy these sermons and share them with others, but kindly note that they should not be reproduced for sale. May the blessings of the Triple Gem be with you.